I knew it would come to this someday. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Roger. I'm happy to be here. Happy to be sober. I'm going to set my droid up here. And they didn't have these when I was a kid. Didn't even have phones when I was a kid. You got to hear my wife last week if you were here, and the better half. And this week I was asked to speak, and so I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I got sober on September 15th, 1982. My home group is 2250 Group in St. Petersburg. Yeah, that's right, man. I have a sponsor, and I do sponsor others. Come on, guys. I didn't think I sponsored that many guys. I grew up in New York State, in the Hudson Valley, about 50 miles north of New York City. And it was a very small, Peyton Place kind of town. Everybody knew everybody. Main Street really was Main Street. Nothing taller than two or three stories, and everybody knew everybody. And I went to my family was, I don't know, there was really nothing crazy in my family. Semi crazy maybe, but not really over the top. Not to the point where it should have made an alcoholic out of me, or could have made an alcoholic out of me. Whatever the hell that means. Anyway, I went to Catholic grammar school, I did not like it there. It was taught by nuns, and back in the old days, you know, they all wore the full habits, and they had the rosary, rosary beads that was customary, the black habit, the hat, and the 3-foot-long ruler, which they didn't use for measuring. I did not like it there because I was yelled at a lot, and I was yelled at a lot because I didn't study and I didn't do my homework. But I couldn't put that together with why I was being yelled at, because I was living in a real fantasy world, really, right out the gate. I was just into my head. And my earliest memories revolve around a lot of, like, fear, anxiety, sense of being alone even when I was with people, a sense of not fitting in, a sense that everybody had the instruction booklet for life but me. Everybody seemed to know what the hell was going on but me. I didn't know what was going on. Life to me felt like when I looked out, I saw like a battlefield. And I was, I had to maneuver my way through it. It was hostile territory. It was not friendlies. I didn't see any friendlies around. And that was just the way I felt, that was my perception of life. So I went through grammar school, got through there, got out of grammar school, went to a regular general public high school, and it was like somebody took the handcuffs off me, and it was like, yeah, now I can operate. I'm all of 16, and I fell in with a crowd of people that were kind of like me. I don't know why. I don't know how that happens. It just, I seemed to gyrate towards people that were kind of like me, and got a driver's license early on, by the time I was 16, because in that little town you really couldn't get around much. It was surrounded by mostly government property, and it was wide open spaces, and so it was common to get a driver's license at a young age, and that's what I did. And I became very popular with a driver's license, especially when you added a car to it. And for whatever reasons, And I hear this a lot in AA. It's like, by the time I was 16, you know, I had already drank a few times. But I had been, I'm kind of thick, and I didn't quite get the magical properties of alcohol right out the gate. It took a little while for it to dawn on me that this was the answer to all the problems in my life. Now, by the time I was 18, I got it. And I'll tell you what would happen is I would have a couple of drinks, and that underlying anxiety that I had felt all my life would just magically disappear. And I never realized just how anxious I was until I had a few drinks, and it went away. And suddenly that wall between me and you came down, and I felt a part of. And I knew how to talk to you, and I knew how to, more importantly, I knew how to talk to women. And I could fit in. And it was just, it was like, wow, this is the answer. This is what I need. This works. It wasn't long after I turned 18. In New York State, you could drink illegally at 18 then. I guess it's 21 now. But you could drink legally then at 18 years old. So I was legal by the time I was 18. And so I drank. And I worked part-time. I lived at home. Alcohol was great. Alcohol was wonderful. But it was even more wonderful when I added other things to it. And so I drank wine and heroin. And, they really complemented each other very nicely. Now, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and believe me, I qualify as an alcoholic, as you'll soon know. So I don't get much into that aspect, but there were other things involved other than alcohol. But anyway, moving forward, I wound up in trouble because of these other substances. For selling them to friends, I figured, you know, why not share the wealth? And the high school I went to in this little Peyton Place town, they kind of frowned on that kind of activity, especially when I got busted and I wound up on the front page of the local newspaper. So when I got bailed out of jail and went back to school, they didn't want me to stay there. Because I was going to get a high school diploma, damn it. I mean, that's what I was supposed to do. And I was going to finish 12th grade and move on with my life. Crazy. But anyway, so I got kicked out of high school. I got busted. I wound up going to a, quote, rehab. The only difference was it had bulletproof glass instead of bars. And I spent a little time there. And I did get my high school equivalency diploma there. I filled in the time. I got it anyway. I'm holding this for two hands for a reason. And one is I'm nervous. And I think it's great that the lady that spoke earlier, it's just awesome that you can come up here and do that. I mean, you know, when I was newer in the program, you would have to bring me up here in a stretcher, man, to get me to a crowd this big with a microphone. A microphony and a phony at the mic. I just have to use that line. And it's not easy. You know, it's not easy doing those things. It's difficult. Anyway, I got busted and went to jail for a little while and got out and went right back to my... I hadn't learned anything, of course, other than don't get caught. That was the lesson I learned, and you know, went back to doing that same old thing with the alcohol, and I'm like 19, 20, going out with a girl. I'm in a long-term relationship, sort of, and when she'd have me. And I noticed that by the time I'm like 20 years old, I'm working a regular job. I'm still living at home. I can still qualify. I'm 20. And I'm working a regular job, and by this time my drinking had really increased. I mean, my alcoholism increased rapidly. The amount of alcohol it took at 16 or 17 or 18 to do the job, you know, had increased. I mean, what used to take two or three drinks now took a pint to get the same wonderful benefits that I had been getting with two or three drinks just a few years earlier. And so, I said, well, that's what's called tolerance, and I can deal with that. No problem, just drink more, get the same effects, no problem. Just work a little harder, make a little more money to pay for that extra booze. And so I did that. But to give you like a, by the time I was like 21, still living at home, still working, still with the girlfriend, this is how my day started to go, is I'd wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, right? And I'd lean over the side of the bed, and I'd pick up the vodka bottle, and boom, because I was a vodka drinker. And I never understood people that waited to drink till the end of the day. Why? Why would you deprive yourself? But, you know, I'm speaking for myself, for myself. There's a lot of different types of drinkers, and believe me, I've seen them all. And they're just as screwed up as me. But anyway, so that's how I would start my day. Reach over the side of the bed, pick up the vodka bottle, have a couple of hits, boom, 6 o'clock in the morning, jump in the shower. I was a welder, so steady nerves. And I would pack my lunch, which consisted of a lunchbox. Back then they had real lunchboxes. And a thermos, and the thermos was filled with vodka, of course. Why would I put coffee in there? And I would off to work, be there at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I would start welding. And this is in upstate New York, and if you don't think it gets hot up there in August, believe me, it does. Especially when you're wearing leathers from head to toe, and you're hungover, and you're welding, and the smoke, and everything, and the heat. And break time would come, everybody would open up their lunch boxes and break out their thermoses and have their coffee, and I would have my vodka, and back to work I'd go. And that's how my day started to go. That's how my days started to go. There was a real true progression there. Now I knew, you know, I knew I had a problem with alcohol. I knew that. But I didn't think I was going to have to do anything about it. I mean, because it was still working. I mean, it's getting a little harder now. I didn't quite have the same amount of spring when I got out of bed in the morning as, you know, a few years earlier, but I could still do it. I could still do it. The booze was still working. It took more, but it was still working. And I was going to keep it working, by God. And so that continued, and I got in more trouble. So my folks decided to move out of that little town in New York, and they had an opportunity to move to San Francisco, which is really a nice place to be drunk or sober, preferably sober. And so they moved out there, and I moved with them. I went with them. I didn't have nothing else to do. And okay, I'm going. I'm with you. Yeah, no problem. And so they took me along, drove across the country, got to San Francisco. And I just continued doing what I was doing. But now my drinking was getting so bad, and the magic really was really wearing off now. I mean, come on. Would any of us be here if it was still working like it used to work? Would any of us be here if the consequences hadn't increased from the way they started at the beginning? I don't think so. I wouldn't be, that's for sure. I can tell you that right now. If alcohol still did for me what it did for me when I was 17 or 18, believe me, I wouldn't be here. I'd be out in the bar. But it really was losing its ability to make things okay. And so the consequences went up, the pain got worse, and now I was waking up in the morning really sick. And, you know, you've heard about the hideous four horsemen in the big book. Oh, yeah, they were there, man. They were showing up on a regular basis now. Terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. I would wake up in the morning and I'd be terrified. And I'd be terrified as soon as I woke up. And I had to get alcohol in me quick. to get rid of those four horsemen. And if I didn't have any alcohol, if I reached over the end of that bed, and believe me, this was happening on a regular basis now, I'd pick up that bottle, and there was nothing in there but dust. I had to come up with the money to get a bottle of vodka, and I had to get it quick, otherwise I'd get too sick to drink. And on those days were horrifying days. And so things got bad enough to a point where my parents were just at wit's end, because I was, you know, what we do as alcoholics, at least if you're an alcoholic of my type, is we don't just torture ourselves, we take as many people with us as possible. And so my parents were paying the price too. And at some point in there, they decided to call Alcoholics Anonymous while I was in the middle of a bender. This is 1981, I think. And these three guys showed up at the house. I'm half looped. They show up at the house and they said, "You're coming with us." And I said, "Okay." I thought we were going out to party, hang out, do whatever. I didn't know. I just, you know, I was so out of it. I just figured, "Hey, yeah, friends. Yeah, it's great. Haven't seen any friends in years." And and they took me off, right? And they brought me over to this guy's house where there were a bunch of other people, maybe 10 other people, guys and gals. They were all relatively young. I was, you know, in my mid-20s. They were all relatively young. And we sat there, and they stared at me, and I stared at them. And I didn't see any bottles of alcohol in there. And they said, "You're staying with us." I said, "Okay." And I just sat there, and they sat there, and it went like that. And I got more and more uncomfortable because, you know, what alcohol that was still working was now not working, and it was wearing off, and I was getting very sick. And the next morning, they brought me to a Nooner, first real Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and they went with me, some of them, because they stayed with me and shook me out that night, the old-fashioned way back then. There wasn't as many places as there is now to do that. And I was just deathly ill the next morning. And they took me off to this noon meeting. And they gave me, can you believe this, how it works to read, right? Now, I'm like this. I can't even hardly see the words, much less hold the paper steady. And I'm up here like this. And when I finally finished that, the meeting was about over. And I got a standing ovation. So I never forgot that. So they said to me, "You know, you can stay sober. You don't ever have to drink again. Go where we go and do the things we do, and your life is going to get better, and everything's going to be fine." And I'm thinking, yeah, okay. So, but I was scared, and I was desperate. And so I did start going where they went. And I kind of followed them around, and they went to meetings almost every night. And we would sit in the meeting, all right? And people would talk, and it was the Charlie Brown thing. Wah, 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 wah. What in the hell is anybody talking about? First things first, the steps. Where? I didn't get it. It was like somebody was talking a foreign language I did not understand. And these guys were big into coffee. I don't mean drinking coffee at the meetings. They did plenty of that. It was going out to coffee after the meeting. And I don't mean once or twice a week. I mean every night. And then, of course, I had to go. Whether I liked it or not, you're going. Okay, I'm going. Boom. And they would try to explain to me what went on in the meeting and what I needed to do. And I got a big book and a sponsor. And, you know, it didn't make sense. And they said, "Okay, you know, my sponsor said do this, this, and this," and okay, and it's like, all right. And so we got to the fourth step finally after a few months, and he said, "I want you to write down all your stuff." Okay, I'll do that. And so I started writing, and then I hit this roadblock. Something came up, and I said, "I don't really have to talk about this. I don't really have to write this down because this really makes me feel ashamed and guilty. And what if my folks knew? What if anybody else found out? This is my disease talking now, right? So I'm not going to write that down. I'm going to leave that off the list. Look at all the good stuff I got on here. I mean, come on, I can skip a couple of things, please." And so I did. I left a couple things off. And the time came to read it, do my fifth step. And I did, and I read it. And at the end of the reading, I'm like, yeah. And then he looked me dead in the eye, and he came up with something I didn't expect, and that was, did you tell me everything? It's one thing to be lying when you're drunk. That's easy. But when you're sober or trying to be sober, and you know the guy, you know on some level that this guy is trying to help you, and you're looking him dead back in the eyes, and you're saying, oh, yeah, yeah, I told you everything. And you know you're lying, man. It ain't pretty. It is not pretty, because that almost immediately started gnawing on my leg like a crazy bull terrier. Something like that. Some kind of wild animal. So, anyway, I wasn't really quite getting the whole concept of this thing, and I really, something was missing, and I started kind of fading away a little bit. I wasn't quite showing up as often anymore, and they had told me things about, you should show up every night, and keep reading your book, and we have to make a list for the amends, and it's like, yeah. And I started my, maybe I don't have to go to so many meetings, or maybe I wasn't really that bad. See, the book talks about, this inability for us to bring back with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation that our drinking brings about. Oh, yeah. Oh, it does that, man. So this started getting real fuzzy in my head about just how bad I was. Right? Maybe it wasn't really that bad. I hadn't had a drink in 5 months. Surely I must be a winner. And so that's my disease started working on me, and I started fading away from the meetings. And there was a night, and I'm still living at home, of course, and sleeping on the couch, luxury gigs. And my parents were out for the night. They were so grateful that I wasn't drinking. They were so happy. Just that I wasn't drinking was like made everything good for them. And so they went out of the house, right, this night. And I'm like, maybe it really wasn't all that bad. And there is a vodka bottle here, by the way, because I knew that. There was a vodka bottle under the counter. And I picked that vodka bottle up, and in the back of my head there was this fuzzy little sound saying, maybe you really shouldn't do this. Maybe this isn't a good idea. Maybe you shouldn't. But I did. And I remember thinking that and having that drink. I'll never forget it. And then I was off to the races, man. I got blottoed that night. The magic was still gone. And I remember waking up the next morning, and it was like, wow. The minute I woke up, there was no sense that, I'm not going to drink until tonight, or I'm not going to drink again for a few days, or, I'm going to control it this time. No. I was gone. First thing I know, when I open my eyes, first thought in my mind is, I need a drink. That obsession was on me like an animal, and the physical craving was still there. And so I went back out, I drank, I tried to come back to AA for a year and a half. It took a year and a half for me to get back here. Is it really 8:25? How long do I have to talk to him?
About
40. 8:40? Oh, cool. I'll be sober long before then, man. Anyway, so I went out for a year and a half. Oh, you got signs. That's good. Anyway, so I went back out for a year and a half. And I'll tell you, I didn't think my drinking really could get any worse than it had already gotten. When I was there. When I came in that first time, I didn't think it could get any worse. I really didn't. But anybody that's been here for a while, that's going back out, can tell you, man, they came back here not because it was getting better. Oh, it was getting worse, man. It was getting so much worse. I just didn't think it could even get that bad. And I wound up in the hospital in intensive care 5 times over the next year and a half. And I wound up in the San Francisco General Hospital rubber room. The whole Megillah, man, the whole Megillah. And in between, I tried to show up. I'd show up drunk, and they'd, same guys. Yeah, come on, Rod, you can make it, you can do it. But that wasn't happening. And I remember part of the thing was they really screwed up my drinking, man, like it had been good, right? But they made it even worse. They really did, because I could not drink those guys out of my head. I had 5 months of being around those guys, man, and I had absorbed just a lot of toxic stuff, man. It really, really, really brutalized my drinking. And the stuff would come back at the most inopportune times. It's the first drink that'll get you drunk while I'm holding the bottle. Just horrible, horrible. And so this last trip out, I'm in intensive care again, and doctor comes in and da 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 da. They're running an EKG, EEG, any kind of G. You know, I was messed up, man. I was messed up. And while I'm laying in that hospital bed, what am I thinking? If I had a drink, it'd all be good. Life would be sweet. Right? That's the insanity of it. It's amazing, isn't it? I'm laying in bed as a direct result of alcohol. I'm dying. It ain't working. Hasn't been working. I'm getting no relief. And yet that obsession is still telling me, in the strongest possible terms, if I had a drink, my life would get better. It still amazes me. The power of this disease blows me away. It really does. Because I get to watch it all the time. We all get to watch it. And we see it in action. And we see people that we care about coming and going and struggling with this thing. It's just a brutal disease. And it's so much larger than, and I didn't know this until I got back this time, it's so much larger than picking up a drink. It's so much larger than the symptom of drinking alcohol. Alcohol is a symptom. That's what I've come to understand by coming to these rooms. It's a symptom of a much larger illness that rests right here between my ears. And anyway, so that was my thinking. Desperate, you know, that overwhelming obsession, you know, that we get as alcoholics to have another one. And while I'm in that thing, something happens. And just like that, like somebody flipped a switch, the obsession just, like a balloon popped, and it was gone. Just like that. Boom. And I knew two things. One, that I had to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And two, I never had a drink again if I did that. And I knew what had happened. And I knew I had zero to do with it. It had nothing to do with willpower. It had nothing. Come on, man. Seconds earlier, it was like, give me the booze. And now it's like, there's no desire. Just like that. That's a miracle for me. That's a miracle. And this is my story, and this is how it worked for me. I've heard a million different stories of people that come in here and crave alcohol or have the obsession for alcohol for days, weeks, months before it finally fades away. And they're just as sober as I am. They're just as sober as I am. So it doesn't matter whether you get it like what happened to me, or whether it's a slower process, right, that makes the obsession fade away. The only thing that matters is that it goes away. So anyway, my parents came in to see me. I knew what had happened. There was an immediate huge relief from being released from that obsession, that I didn't have to have a drink. It was just huge. And my parents came in and they said, we're going to send you to a 28-day detox. I said, okay. I didn't care because I knew what had happened. I didn't have to go to that detox, but it didn't matter, right? So I went to the detox. And in the detox, they run you through, this detox I went to, it was a 28-day program. They run you through the first 5 steps. And I knew what I had left off my first inventory, so that went right on this inventory. Boom. Right? And I got out of that. And I dumped it all at that place. I got out of that place. I went into a halfway house for a few months. I got out of that place. And I found myself back with my old pals, my original group that I'd gotten with the first time around. I felt a part of to some degree. I had worked some steps, the obsession was gone, and I started being able to live a little bit. And I would like to stand up here and tell you that I went to 7 meetings a week for the next 28 years, worked all my steps, practiced all the principles every day. Yeah, yeah. I'd like to tell you that, but that would be a lie. and I'm trying not to do that as often anymore. But what I can tell you is I struggled. Even though what had happened to me was something I knew I had nothing to do with, I still struggled with this thing. If I understand the book correctly, it talks about alcoholics being self-will run riot, but not me. Following line, though we usually don't think so. And being that kind of alcoholic, really hard-headed, some might call it a different term, like he's really dumb. I had to get out there and really run this thing around the block, man. I really did. Now that's for me. And God bless you if you can come in here, and more power to you. If you can come in here and you can sit in these chairs night after night and do the right thing, you're going to save yourself a lot of grief, I suspect. That was not what, that's not what I had to do. I had to get out there and still burn out a lot. See, I had a lot of old ideas that I still thought might really work a little bit. And I swear to God, I had to bring every one of them into AA and try it out in here. Every one, man. Let's see if this will fly, right? Because my nature is to look for the easier, softer way. That's my nature. And so, thinking that these old ideas would help me, I brought them in here. And, you know, they got blown up on a regular basis by my sponsor and the people around me who, you know, the thing about being around other alcoholics that are just like you is they've already tried that crap. And so they're just seeing the same old game. You know, we think we're doing something slick and they're yawning, and we find out later why, because they've already seen it 100 times, you know, and, I settled down a little bit after a little while, and I started being part of in this thing. Now, we went to coffee on a regular basis, right? I fell in with some guys. They were mostly my age, same group. And we would move from group to group like a commando unit, take as many hostages as possible, and then bring them over to our group. And we had a group that met on Sunday nights. It was called the Week That Was group. And that was a great way for us to know what was going on in each other's lives, because it was about the week that was. So you had to sit there and talk about your week and what went on during your week, what worked, what didn't, right? And, you know, what might work to make it better for whatever kind of difficulty you might have gotten into. And it was just a wonderful way for us to stay very, very close to each other and to have some kind of handle on what each of us was doing. It was just a great way to go. And so we would meet on Sundays. Now, in San Francisco, they did teleservice. With teleservice, we would get the phones from 6 in the evening until 10 at night. And of course, the meeting was 6 in the evening until 10 at night, and sometimes later. And we would do teleservice, and that's how we picked up newcomers. The phone would ring, and a posse would go out, capture the alcoholic and drag him in, and then we would go to work on him. And, you know, when you're sober, relatively new, you're out there, if you're like me, you're out there, you know, trying to give this thing away, whether they want it or not. And, you know, and it wasn't always pretty to watch. I know that now. But there was a genuine wanting to be of help. And I love to watch alcoholics working with other alcoholics, because as an alcoholic, I am not Mr. Social. You know, I am not the kind of person that mixes easily with other people. I am a loner. You know, I like to isolate and do those kinds of things that get me in trouble. And I have to sometimes force myself to be social and meet people and hang out and get to know them. And so we, you know, 5 minutes, that's good. All right. I got 5 minutes left. Anyway, so we developed very, very intimate, close, really close, tight relationships with the people in my group. Then, you know, this was all in San Francisco, and when we moved back to New York, I got married from a girl in the group, Terry, and you know, she had a good program, and I had some kind of program. And you know, and we got together and we started seeing each other, and I had gotten burned a couple of times by really sick women. Like, I wasn't sick, right? Yeah. Yeah. That took a long time to dawn on me. I was the sick one. But anyway, I went very slowly into this relationship with her, and we dated as a regular dating thing, once a week, sometimes twice a week, and we would see each other, and affection grew from that, then love grew from that, and we started seeing each other more and more, but we did go slowly for a while. And I learned in AA how to be a friend, be a son, be a brother, how to treat a woman, and a lot of other stuff. And through the process of working the steps, I made amends, found a power greater than myself, which solved my problem, all my problems. I highly recommend that. The last time I checked the big book, that was the only program of recovery that was in there. And it has opened up a whole new world. I mean, I love my life. My emotions are out there now. I don't have only two emotions, fear and hate. I have all the emotions, and they're like, my emotions are the salsa on my chips. It is the spice of my life. It is what makes life good. If you didn't have any emotions, I mean, what kind of life would you have? It would be like, you know, blah, like a computer. And you know, and so I love the roller coaster ride, and I get to experience all the ups and downs, right? I get to rant and rave, and I get to have a really great life, and I'm surrounded by all these guys that make my phone ring all the time. And I hate it when it rings all the time, but they are helping me save my ass, and I think I also contribute to them. And so we pull each other through this thing, and we need each other. We need that. And we need that very badly here. And if you're new here, dudes or dudettes, I mean, you can have, I would never have believed I could have the life I have today. I would never have believed it. I wouldn't have thought it was possible. And it's all different. It's like Superman's Bizarro World. Everything I believe, it's different than anything I think it should be. It's nothing like I thought it would be. It's totally different and totally better. 1 minute and counting. And I just keep hanging in there, like the lady said earlier that spoke. Just keep showing up. And things happen here, man. If you haven't, you know, if you're hanging back there, you know, get into this thing. Jump in with both feet. Talk to people. Face that fear. Because through facing those fears, you'll be set free. And the large part of the disease beyond the alcohol drinking is the freedom I get from the bondage of me, from the bondage of self. And that's what I've gotten. Now, it isn't always there. God knows. But it does come on a regular basis. And I feel good about myself. I feel good about the people I'm around. I hated AA for a long time, on and off, and I love it now. I love it. This is like, AA is the best reality show on God's green earth, man. If you could put this on TV, we could make a fortune. We could all retire. We'd have a pension plan. I mean, it's, you know, but we can't do that, unfortunately. But anyway, I just want to say thank you for asking me to share, and I'll see you around the campus. Thank you.